Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Connor Brumley, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Ned Keating. And we've got a lot to talk about, but of course, there is only one place to start. The Carabao Cup final yesterday, Liverpool winning the game 1-0 after extra time. And it was a controversial game. We're going to talk about all the major points, the VAR calls, Liverpool's team selection, maybe even a little bit on the Gary Neville situation, which Mauricio Pochettino mentioned in his press conference yesterday. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to the Carabao Cup. But we'll start with Virgil van Dijk getting the winner, header from a corner. Do you think that was the right result after 2 hours of play?
I think on the balance, yes. You know, Chelsea, for whatever reason, both in the match itself, they seemed to start slow and sluggish, and Liverpool had the better of the early exchanges. And in extra time, Liverpool seemed to be the more, you know, I wouldn't say dominant, but definitely the better side throughout. Chelsea just seemed to, I don't know what happened to them. You know, maybe they were tired themselves and they were kind of playing for penalties from the start of extra time, but they just weren't at it in that period as well. So I think kind of if you look at the game on the whole, and you probably would say that while Chelsea maybe had the better chances, I've not looked at the XG, but I suppose from the chances that Chelsea had, you know, that one in the first half that really, really stands out, where Cole Palmer had his shot brilliantly blocked by Kevin Kelleher, and then Wataru Endo putting in a fantastic block to stop Nicholas Jackson following home with the rebound. I'd say Chelsea's XG, without looking at it, may have been higher, but actually I think on the whole balance of play and the whole game itself, I think Liverpool were definitely well worth their victory. And, you know, a tremendous victory it was for Liverpool, given, you know, you kind of, we saw it during it. We talked about it last week on the podcast and everyone spoke about it in the warm-up. So it's kind of been done to death, but, and it didn't need hammering home, but you looked at that bench for Liverpool, not the bench, sorry, but behind the bench where the players that were injured were all sat. And, you know, you could see the cast list there of glittering names that were absent for Liverpool and even, you know, some other names that weren't sat around them perhaps as well, with some of the other tweets that we saw over the weekend as well that mentioned the injured players for Liverpool. There was one that I saw had forgotten about poor old Joel Matip as well, left him off of it as well. So even then, that injury list is so long and been so lengthy for so long that you start to forget other players that were injured for Liverpool. But, you know, that kind of really at home when you could see Salah sat there, Darwin Nunez, Szoboszlai, Trent Alexander-Arnold all sat around, and Liverpool still managed to go and win a cup final against a squad that was, you know, so expensively assembled. You know, speaks volumes for the character of both sides. And in that respect, I think then if you're looking at the character of both sides, you know, I think that the right result won out in the end. The side that showed more hunger, more fight, more desire was Liverpool for me. And that proves, I think, in the end result.
Talking about Chelsea, you know, their first, you mentioned before the start of the game, but their first half an hour was so poor. I think Liverpool, in some ways, would probably feel with regret if they didn't win the game in the end, that they didn't capitalise on that first half an hour, because the strongest Liverpool were in the game really was the start of the game, because that's before they had to make substitutions and bring on a lot of younger players. You know, that was the time really for them to take control of the game. And Chelsea was so poor in those, you know, initial throws of the game. Can you think of a reason why, you know, they would come into this final and look so disjointed and so almost disorganized?
I think you could put that down for the whole season in general, really, that consistently inconsistent, I think, with Chelsea. We've never seen, I can say now we've never seen the true Chelsea this year, but we don't know what the true Chelsea is under Mauricio Pochettino, because they have been so consistently inconsistent. And they come into the final with, you know, a little bit of momentum behind, knocking out Villa out of the FA Cup, you know, performing so well, so admirably, so brilliantly at City the week before in the league. And you're kind of thinking, okay, you know, maybe it's taken time for Pochettino to get his ideas over and everything else. And now it's starting to finally click for Chelsea. And then, as you say there, that first half an hour, they were still on the team bus, I think, the way that they were playing. And you're right, you know, that Liverpool team, look, as long as that injury list is, and yes, you know, you would love to have going into a final, you would love to have, you know, even just one of, you know, Salah or Trent or Szoboszlai available, and all three of them were out injured amongst others as well, you know, any one of those three would have improved that starting 11 for sure. But that wasn't a bad starting 11 for Liverpool, was it? You know, all aside from Harvey Elliott, I think all full internationals as well that started the game for Liverpool. So it wasn't exactly, you know, we talk about it being an extensive injury list, and yes, you know, that starting 11 maybe was probably more akin to a team a little bit further down the Premier League table than one currently challenging for the title because of those injuries, those first team, those key players. Still a good starting 11 all the same. And then obviously, as you said there, it was when the kids came on that you kind of felt that this is where it would kind of come away from Liverpool, and they would have had to, you know, the surprise is for sure definitely that they won it when the kids were on the pitch, when they were a little bit more inexperienced, where, you know, Chelsea's experience should have shown through in the end. But I think that probably should have told us what was to come, that the mentality wasn't there from Chelsea, that they should have been there from the off, at it from the off. It's a cup final. If you're not up for that, when are you ever going to be up for it? So it shouldn't have been a surprise that Chelsea really weren't able to raise their game once Liverpool's youngsters came on and they were playing against the under-18s rather than the first team. And that, you know, is it a surprise? No, it probably shouldn't, because we know that these issues have been there throughout this squad, throughout the campaign. You know, there's a reason why they've spent, you know, over £1 billion on players and they're still languishing around mid-table. Teams like Wolves, who we probably both on this podcast at the start of the season tipped to go down given the disarray that they were in the summer, and Wolves are now above Chelsea in the table, definitely having a much better season than Chelsea. You know, it's not just the cup final that highlights that there is a mentality issue at Chelsea. I think the whole season shows that there is one. And, you know, they're not recruiting the right characters, I think. You know, again, you go back to that Liverpool squad, and I don't think you could doubt the characteristics and you know, the mentality. You know, Jurgen Klopp always calls them mentality monsters, even for those kids that came on. You know, we're talking teenagers that are getting their first, not just a first cup final, first taste of first team football. And they're doing it at Wembley, and they're getting used to it, or, you know, Anfield in the week, and helping them come from behind against Luton in the Premier League. And that mentality clearly stems from the top down at Liverpool. And I think for Chelsea, they just have an issue with that, and that showed itself at the weekend.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we're 7 minutes in now, and I haven't talked about VAR. I do want to talk about other areas of this final and talk more about Liverpool for sure. But there was three major decisions. I'm interested to hear your take. So the first one, Moises Caicedo on Ryan Gravenberch, a nasty-looking tackle. It looked innocuous, to be fair, live, but then when you see the replay and you see it slowed down, pretty nasty-looking challenge. The second one, Chelsea's disallowed VAR goal for offside. And then the third one, the Virgil van Dijk first goal that was disallowed. It's not the goal he actually scored, but he did score earlier in the game. So we'll start with the potential red card challenge. What's your verdict on that one? Was it a red? Was Caicedo lucky?
It's one of those that if the blue card, for all it's been much maligned since they've mentioned that they were going to bring a blue card in, I think actually this is probably the perfect blue card example almost. it did endanger an opponent, so by that merit, it should be a red card. But you look at Caicedo's movement and where he's looking at that point. You know, everything looks terrible in slow motion, but what it allows you to see is that actually at that moment, he doesn't have a clue where he's putting his foot. And we've seen this season at Chelsea, he's not the player that maybe we thought he was at Brighton, where he looked so clued up and linked in and knew exactly what he was doing at every single moment. He can have these, especially when he's in possession as well. I know that this occurred whilst he was trying to win the ball back, but in possession as well, he does look a little bit like he's not sure what he's doing at all times. And I think that that moment highlighted it. You know, have we seen red cards given for that in the past? Yes. You know, should the fact that he is not fully, you know, aware of what he's doing, should that, you know, should that draw away? Should that make it only a yellow? You know, again, he's endangering an opponent, but you do feel that in that instance, he doesn't know where he's going to plant his foot, and he doesn't expect Paul Gravenberch to have his foot there as well and planted and everything else. In that instance, maybe it would have been a blue card. You know, maybe this idea of sending him to a sin bin for 10 minutes, look, you've been naughty, don't do it again. Okay, but I understand that actually it probably wasn't malicious in its intent. So maybe, you know, as much maligned as it has been, maybe that would have been a perfect example for the blue card had it been in place for the final. For the Sterling goal, I always find with offsides that, you know, and it will come on to the, and it kind of, it will feed into the Virgil van Dijk goal as well, is that with, you know, VAR, we were told that it was for clear and obvious errors. Surely we've got to make that little bit line a little bit thicker. Like, you know, does it look like a clear and obvious error? I don't think it does. You know, is it clear and obvious? You know, automatic offsides is something that they're looking to introduce. It's something that's seen very much in UEFA competitions at the minute. And I think that's a positive step, and it has to go to that. I think we have to have automatic offsides. I think if there is the opportunity for that technology to be there, well, then we're not talking about this today. You know, the it will prove one way or the other, he's offside or he's not, if automatic offsides were there. And it would definitely get rid of that grey area, because there are, you know, I mean, there's so many. I mean, you know, I can remember when, towards the start, when VAR came in the Premier League, and I think my beloved Tottenham were at home to Sheffield United. I think David McGoldrick might have been offside by like a little bit of a toe. Like his little toe was offside or whatever, or like a tiny fraction of his big toe, and that was given as offside. You know, that wouldn't have been happened back in the day. You know, if it was automatic offsides, they wouldn't have, they might not have registered, might not have picked up. But either way, we can't argue with it because the technology is there, and it's so, you know, kind of, yeah, accurate with how it describes the offside that it knows down to the kind of smallest millimetres. So we can't kind of moan about it there if we had automatic offsides, but we don't. So we're allowed to have this conversation this morning. And to finish the rant on the third one, we've seen so many examples. The issue with this here is the consistency. We've seen so many examples of this. You know, you look at other teams as well. Arsenal are good at kind of, you know, starting offside, coming back offside and kind of interfering with play, but their goals are kind of standing, even if the players are there and they're kind of disrupting the defensive line and everything. Do I think Levi Colwill would have got back to stop Van Dijk? I don't think so. I mean, you had this discussion last night, and I think the only way he gets to that ball first is that he's 7 foot tall. Does it put Van Dijk off? Possibly, but I think Van Dijk is someone who kind of follows the ball throughout, so I don't know if that would put him off. I think he had his eyes on the ball throughout, and I still think he would have headed it home. But the point that I've got here, and this is what I would do to make VAR better, is would Chelsea have challenged that? You know, if it was a system similar to, you know, cricket where you get reviews and tennis where you get reviews as well for decisions that you think actually, you know, you've got the decision wrong there, would Chelsea have actually challenged that decision? You know, I mean, the chances are is that, you know, every time, you know, the issue with this, of course, is that, you know, goals are so few and far between in games. It's not like, you know, tennis, you get, you know, there's so many decisions in every single set that kind of lead up to that point. You know, every shot is almost on the line. That's where the tennis players aim for. And likewise, in cricket, you get 11 wickets or 11 chances. You know, there's multiple ones. In football, it's very finite, very small window. You know, there's, you know, we do see big games. I know, you know, what is it? Mansfield stuck 9 past Harrogate the other week. There are games where you do get lots of goals. Of course they are, but majority are 1 or 2 goal games. So this idea of reviews might need a little bit of tweaking. But would Chelsea have reviewed that if they had a review, knowing that if they couldn't, they would have lost that review? Would they have saved that review for something else? You know, was it a clear and obvious error, basically? Would Chelsea have viewed it as a clear and obvious error? And I think the way that the players were, I don't think many of them were, you know, on the pitch at least, many of them were, you know, kind of appealing to the referee saying, rule this goal out. And because of that, I don't think it was a clear and obvious error. And I don't, you know, like I say, we see this week in, week out in the Premier League, and it, you know, most teams get away with it. If we're ruling goals out for that, we're going to start ruling a lot of goals out. And I think the way that you kind of look at making VAR better on the whole is bringing in this idea of a review system. Would Liverpool, had that Chelsea goal stood for Raheem Sterling, and there was no, you know, we're going to go off and we're going to check it on VAR and we're going to be really analytical with it now, would Liverpool have you know, you look back to those appeals, and would Liverpool have appealed that decision? Would they have used the review up for that? I don't know, because I don't think the players were appealing it that much. And likewise with the Chelsea team, would they have appealed the Van Dijk goal as well? Would they have used the review against that? That's where I think VAR needs to go to improve. I think we need to look at a review system in football. Not only would that speed it up, because then it will reduce the number of, hopefully, the number of VAR reviews in a match as well, but equally then, you know, it kind of stops VAR re-refereeing the game. You know, Chris Kavanagh was in the middle yesterday, but all those big decisions were taken away from him because it was made by someone in the room at Stockley Park rather than on the pitch. We go to a review system, it gives that autonomy back towards more, back towards a referee, I think, at least. So it's one of those. I think VAR, you know, it was going to happen at some point in the cup final. And it, you know, the fact that it's taken until 2024 for it to happen maybe is a good thing. But again, it needs looking at, needs tightening, needs refining. And I think a review system, you know, definitely for both, you know, Raheem Sterling's goal and Virgil van Dijk's goals that were ruled out, I think it would maybe have had a different impact on those if we had a review system in place.
See, I think the red card, my view on that one is that's a subjective decision. I think, like, you get 100 people in a room and they'd all have a different opinion whether or not that was a red card. So I think you stick with the on-field decision for that. The offside goal that Chelsea scored, I actually think the linesman flagged it, didn't he? I'm pretty sure, because I'm sure Mike Dean on commentary was saying that it was the referee, the linesman had flagged it. I think it's impossible to tell, though. You would think that the camera at Wembley for a big final, they would have a camera that would show that in a better light. And I think that's a flaw for VAR, is the fact that they don't have the perfect camera set up when they should. If they're going to have this in place, you should have a camera on the halfway line that can see that. The Van Dijk one, I actually think, was an offside, because Endo isn't trying to play the ball, is he? He's not looking at the ball. His only objective is to block the Chelsea man. He does that from an offside position. And we are guessing to say that Colwill couldn't head it. So I think they actually got that one right. So I'm probably going to venture to say they got all three right.
But it's the instance of consistency. We see that happen week in, week out in the Premier League. You know, Arsenal do it regularly, and they're not the only ones. Liverpool do it as well, clearly. That's what we saw at the weekend. Yet those goals stand in the Premier League. There's no, oh, we're going to check that on VAR. You know, we can go back and do you know what? I would actually venture that, yes, I'm name-checking Arsenal and Liverpool here as being two of the biggest culprits, but actually I'd probably venture that probably every single team in the Premier League has used that tactic at least at some point this season, and it hasn't been given offside against them. Whether or not they've scored, different matter. You know, there's not too many goal-scoring teams down near the bottom of the league, but, you know, maybe with set pieces they might do better. But I, you know, that is a tactic that is well used amongst teams, and we don't see goals ruled out for that very often. And yet we arrive now at a big game, and consistency is all you ask for, I suppose. And the difficulty there is that every referee is different and they will view it differently. But, you know, it has to be now something. The precedent has been set there, so that if we see, you know, in the FA Cup this week, or if we see in the Premier League this weekend, a similar goal being scored and a similar circumstance happens and there is a potential offside, that goal has to be ruled out now, because the precedent has been set there, that we've seen that, oh, well, if that happens, we can't allow that goal. You know, that's where the consistency has to follow. Yes, every referee is different and they will view things, as you said there. Everything is subjective with refereeing, of course it is. But they have to be consistent now, in that we've seen the precedent set that this situation in which players offside or coming back from an offside position block a defender from potentially getting to a ball, that's not a goal. That can't be allowed anymore. And we have to see that ruled out consistently. Like I say, we'll probably see it in the FA Cup or the Premier League this week, that a goal will stand, because the consistency doesn't exist there, unfortunately. That's the issue with refereeing.
Now, No, I see that. And I do, you do see that happen, all, particularly in the lower levels when there is no VAR. It's such a hard thing to referee on the pitch as well, because it's off the ball, isn't it? And the referee's looking at, you know, where the action... I mean, the referee and the linesmen are looking at Van Dijk heading the ball, and they're not necessarily looking at the blocker. Anyway, we're done with VAR now, because that took, I think, about 10 minutes. So we'll move on. We'll continue talking about the game, though. I mean... Do you think we talked about the age of the Liverpool team by the end of the game. Obviously, at the start of the game, Liverpool had a pretty strong team up. But do you think coming at the end of 90 minutes, Chelsea were dominant? You know, Conor Gallagher probably should have scored at least once. They were the team that was really, really pushing to win that game. And for me, in extra time, it just felt inevitable that Chelsea were going to try and find a goal. Do you think right now the regret with Pochettino and that whole Chelsea team is that, you know, they were... I would say embarrassing in that extra time period, because it was pretty pathetic that Liverpool's teenagers who came on were able to more than match Chelsea.
No, 100%. You know, and again, you look at who, you know, I know that those players coming off the bench, you know, some of them were on earlier than extra time and may have been a little bit tight going into it. But again, you know, most of that Chelsea bench were or are full internationals for their national team. You know, you look at who was experienced that Liverpool could bring off their bench. Joe Gomez and Kostas Tsimikas, and the rest of them are all currently academy graduates, you know, all youngsters, all trying to make their name and make their way in football. You know, I would describe that Liverpool team going into extra time. I was describing to my friends as one of those that you'd see on a pre-season tour where an international tournament is still going on. So you've got a smattering of players that their countries didn't even qualify, or they've been knocked out earlier in the competition. And then you've got the youngsters to kind of fill in the spaces where you've got the gaps in your squad. That's what that team was. It was a pre-season team playing extra time against, you know, not Chelsea's strongest 11. Of course, they were without Thiago Silva. They were without their captain, Reece James. Now, there's an argument whether or not Malo Gusto is actually a better right back than Reece James, but we won't have time for that on this podcast. But that was still a very, very strong and very expensively assembled Chelsea squad. So that should have been seen, you know, it was men against boys. It literally was men against boys. And Chelsea should have been able to see to that and see to them. But again, I think it goes back to that hunger and the desire. And yeah, they should absolutely be embarrassed, but I don't think they will be, because I don't think that they have that mentality or that character within their squad. That isn't in their nature. That there's a reason why they lost that final. It's because their character and their mentality isn't right. And that's probably the reason why they're not actually feeling that embarrassed this morning. You know, you look at full-time whistle and you see their reactions to how they lost, and it just looked like any other defeat for them. They were just, you know, oh, damn it, we've lost again. Sad, upset, we go again. I know it's not the biggest cup in the world, but it's still a cup. It's still the first cup of the Todd Boehly era, or it would have been for Chelsea. It would have been a great thing for them to celebrate, but they just, you know, I just think the way that they looked and appeared and approached the game, I think mentally, and I think, you know, that was what let them down yesterday, and that's the reason why Liverpool got the win. They mentality monsters, like we said earlier. You know, that's something that Jurgen Klopp's described the team as, and we thought he was just talking about the first team, but clearly it's something that runs throughout the club, that even the youngsters have this strong mentality, and that's something that Chelsea need to find. You know, it isn't about buying the best players, I think, in the summer or whatever, you know, splashing the cash, and he's going to find the right characters instead, so that instances like yesterday where they get embarrassed and humbled by a group of kids never ever happens again for that team, because it shouldn't. The money that they spent, it absolutely shouldn't.
That leads us very nicely into Gary Neville, who after the game, or pretty much at full time, wasn't it, called Chelsea £1 billion bottle jobs. Now that felt harsh, and it felt, I don't know, from a former pro to say that, and somebody of Gary Neville's standing in the football world, that felt like a really, really strong comment. We know Mauricio Pochettino sort of bit back at that after the game, but what did you make of that? Because it sounds like you agree from what you've just said there that they are £1 billion bottle of jobs. So what do you make of somebody like Gary Neville saying it?
The job he's in, I'm not saying, look, Gary Neville is not a rent-a-god, of course he isn't, but as a pundit, you know, you do have to say, you know, the genesis of what he said is correct. Of course, the fact and how he delivered it, you know, verging on the hyperbole, perhaps, you know, he was maybe a bit, you know, took a lot of dramatic license with what he said there, I think, and kind of used it. But the genesis of what he said is correct. You know, that Chelsea team should have been there from the off. If they pushed that Liverpool team up, this is the thing as well, you know, they should have been there from the off yesterday, knowing that the Liverpool team that started the game was that strongest Liverpool side. There wasn't anyone to come off the bench. You know, I know every time you start a cup final, it's the strongest team. Of course it is. But there was no one to come on the bench to change the game for Liverpool. You know, Costa Simicus and Joe Gomez at fullback is not going to change a game for you by and large. It might do once or twice a season. It isn't going to do it every other week. Liverpool didn't have game changers on their bench. That should have been a sign to Chelsea just to go at them from the off, attack them from the off and tire them out from the off. Because on our bench, okay, maybe they don't have game changers as well, but they've got guys that are a little bit more experienced, you know, kind of, who would I rather want coming off a bench, Mykhailo Mudryk or Bobby Clark? I would have said Mykhailo Mudryk before yesterday. Actually, now looking back on it, I would have taken Bobby Clark. Bobby Clark showed more hunger and desire. And again, I know I keep saying that this morning, and I sound like I probably need to go away and have something to eat afterwards, the amount I'm saying hunger. But the hunger and desire in that Chelsea squad was severely lacking yesterday, which then ties back in with what Gary Neville said, calling them blue billion-pound bottle jobs, being spot on. A stronger team wins that, you know. Liverpool do not win that final if they go up against Arsenal, if they go up against Manchester City. Probably even if they go up against Manchester United, debatable, I think. But Chelsea let that slip. That was because of everything that had happened around it, you know. Like Liverpool, you know, I was listening to a podcast from my friends at Liverpool Echo after their game yesterday, and they were doing it from the stands. And I kind of thought, you know, when they said this comment that even if we lost 3-0, I would have been so proud of us today, you know, the way that they played. And you kind of go, yeah, but you lost the final 3-0. And then you go, well, actually, no, because the chips were all against them. Everything was against them and everything was in Chelsea's favour. You know, Jurgen Klopp was saying beforehand that Chelsea were favourites, and you kind of go, no, but Liverpool are going for the title. And then you go, but no, because they don't have their entire first team 11 all out injured in the stands and watching on. This was a game that Chelsea should have comfortably won. We're not talking about a 1-0 scrappy, nick it and win it because of that bench. You know, no matter what happened in the game, Liverpool were always going to have to rely on their youngsters to either see a win home or to win a game for them. Chelsea had these very expensive players in that starting 11 and on the bench for them, and they still couldn't find a way past, much like we saw them struggle against Spurs earlier in the season when they were playing against nine men. And it was just so, it was just so clear. Spurs with nine men were defending such a high line and they couldn't see it. They couldn't work it out. There is something that is fundamentally not there at this Chelsea side, and that is the mentality of the team and kind of how they play the game mentally. You know, I used to speak to football coaches a lot of the time, and they said that, you know, you'll get one under players like Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo that are actually just better than everyone else technically. But for the rest of them, there's not much that splits players technically. It's what happens upstairs. So for that's the issue that Chelsea have had. They've not got this team around them. They've not got the mentality around them to be able to kind of kick on and take it from there to be able to kind of see games through. And the disappointment there for them is that they'll look back at this and you kind of think that they'll need to look back at this and you know, use this as you know, almost like a rock bottom moment. Will they? I don't know. But we'll see how the season goes on. They've still got one chance, to win a cup competition. They have the opportunity to go out and win the FA Cup this year. They have the opportunity to go and win the FA Cup. But, you know, this was a big chance for them. All things considered, a massive, massive chance for Chelsea to go out and win a trophy, and they missed it. And given how the deck was in their favour, I think, because of all the injuries that Liverpool were suffering, I think Gary Neville was 100% spot on to call them billion-pound blue bottle jobs, because that's exactly what they were. The chance was there. They were the favourites. They played against, you know, they played a good... You know, even if you're playing 30 minutes against kids and you're so expensively assembled, you'd like to think that you could get the job done easily enough, and they still couldn't. So yeah, Gary Neville, 100% spot on, even if there was a bit of dramatic license in what he said and how he delivered it.
Okay, last thing on the final before we'll touch ever so slightly on the Premier League. I know we're running out of time, but do you think this ranks as Klopp's best final? There's been plenty of rhetoric around that, isn't there? And I think Klopp possibly even said it himself yesterday, didn't he, about it being the best final. Now, I just think that's, I don't know, I think it's good words to the press, a good headline. I don't think that it's Liverpool's best final win. I think when you win the Champions League, that is the best, no matter what the circumstance of the game. But what do you make of that? Is it?
Well, no, but different things mean, you know, he'll look back at, you know, and of course, every time he looks back at the medals that he's won, and he'll look at the Premier League medal, and, you know, that will bring a smile to his face. And the Champions League medal, that will bring a smile to his face as well. But the story that he can tell for his grandkids when he drags out the 2024 League Cup medal, and the smile that he'll have, you know, we've got things, and we've, you know, there's probably things that we've done in our lives that are more monumental than other things that we've achieved. But there's always one special thing that you kind of look back on and you kind of go, ah, but geez, the story to get to that one. And that's where I think it ranks better for him. You know, the story of Liverpool winning the Premier League title, you know, they weren't pushed hard in that season. They ran away with it. They had a phenomenal start to the campaign. And yes, you know, kind of the story will be, they had to win it behind closed doors. And that kind of rankles. They weren't able to celebrate that with fans. And I think that's one thing that if Liverpool don't win the title this year, I think Jurgen Klopp will regret about his Liverpool tenure, that they weren't able to win the Premier League with their fans present, at least. You know, the Champions League win, what's the story there? That they, you know, the story is more the semi-final and that win against Barcelona and how they came from behind, but it wasn't the final itself that was the story in that one. In this game, the reason why he said what he said is because, you know, even in his career, this is probably one of the best wins of his career, because everything was against the Liverpool side because of the injuries and everything else. And they still managed to find a way to get that win and to win the cup for Jurgen Klopp and for Liverpool and for their fans as well. And, you know, that's why it's special, because it's the story, it's the journey of how they got there and it's how they arrived at it. It's not, you know, he's won Premier Leagues. He could win the Premier League again this year. He's won the Champions League with Liverpool. Yes, you're right. He's won more prestigious competitions with Liverpool. But it's this medal he will look at and he will smile and he will remember the story of that game. And he will probably remember the entire 90 minutes of that game as well. And it's the emotions that it will generate. And for sure, you know, how does it compare to the 2022 League Cup? This one definitely has got a more special place in his heart. How does it compare to the 2022 FA Cup win? Again, a more special place in his heart. You know, when you look at the emotional attachment, I definitely understand what he means. You know, he's won bigger competitions with Liverpool for sure, but I think the emotional attachment is there, and that's what he means in this instance by it's his most special win.
It's a shame that it wasn't one of the younger lads that scored, because even though it is the rhetoric of these young kids, it was a 70-odd million pound centre-back that scored the winner. So, you know, there was money spent on that team. Anyway, we'll talk very briefly about the Premier League. Arsenal, big win against Newcastle. Just touch on that a little bit, but also defeat for Manchester United against Fulham. I said last week that Man United wouldn't get top four, and I felt very, very proud of my prediction last week when I saw Fulham score in the 96th minute or whatever it was. But just touch on those two for us, Ned.
Are you getting Alex Iwobi tattooed across your chest? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I'll see you down the tattoo parlour this week at some point, just getting that. But again, with Man United, you know, we spoke about Chelsea being consistently inconsistent this morning. And again, with Man United, thinking that they might have turned the corner, that are charging towards the top four. And again, taking several steps back after one step forward. And again, giving themselves work to do as they look to close down. You know, Aston Villa, again, you know, we spoke about them. We kind of thought that they might drop away in the top four race, but Villa look like now that they're the favourites for it again. So, you know, the title race will be exciting. The top four race will be exciting to look at. Arsenal at the minute, the perfect response for them after the Champions League disappointment in midweek, and you know, the Premier League at the minute, you know, this is something that we've spoken about, how Arsenal seem to have turned it on in terms of an attacking sense. You know, in the Premier League, at least. I know they didn't score in Porto in the Champions League in midweek, but in the Premier League, they just seem to really, really found this goal-scoring touch. And that was probably the missing ingredient, we think, for them in the first half of the season, or first half or so of the season, you know, before the start of 2024. They look to be lacking that kind of clinical edge in front of goal, and they definitely seem to have found it. The only issue, the only worry that you'd be for Arsenal fans is, you know, whether or not they might be using up too many goals at this stage. You know, just 2-1s will still be fine. But again, that's what they were doing early on in the season. Maybe they've, you know, got a few goals in reserve that they saved up from not getting big wins earlier in the campaign, and now they kind of can use them. And I think that's definitely a scary thing for Manchester City and Liverpool in the title race, because, again, like I said, you know, there's not been too many question marks, I don't think, about defence this year. And it has been really strong for them. One of the best defensive records in the Premier League, but they were lagging a little bit behind their title rivals in terms of goals scored. And it now seems that they've definitely kind of found a way to find the back of the net with alarming regularity. And, you know, the thing is that if you're scoring goals for fun, that's just going to build confidence more and more as you go towards the kind of business end of the campaign, and you'll be flying higher. You know, yes, you can win games 2-1 and 1-0 here and there and grind them out, and you know, that shows that you've got a great winner's mentality. But equally, all the same, you know, smashing teams for fun, you kind of you kind of get the feeling that you're not going to drop points or lose games because you know you've got enough goals within you and your defence is that tight that you'll be able to see through any team and any situation you find yourself in.
I feel like I just need to mention Wolves just because they won at the weekend. Up to eighth, Gary O'Neill. You mentioned it, I think, a little bit at the start, how difficult a job he's had, you know, coming in there in the summer when Julian Lopetegu left, and now they've, you know, top eight at the minute, ahead of Chelsea, ahead of Newcastle, I think, as well in the Premier League. So really impressive for them this season. You've written here in the plan, should Gary O'Neill be contender for Manager of the Year? For me, that award is sitting there waiting for Rob Edwards when he keeps looting up in the Premier League. But that's all we've got time for today. Ned, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for joining us today. And we'll catch you again later this week.